So, welcome to Pax Europiana. It will be now the introduction of a new series. In the last one, I discussed about regional integration, global regional integration systems. And now I will discuss about the European Union, but the history of the European Union, because I think that's important. But I will tell it out of the perspective of the United States of America and NATO. And I think that's the logical next step, because now I have explained regional integration systems, I have explained the First and Second Cold War before, and I have explained exactly the actionable items of which enlargements for which institutions are necessary out of the perspective. So I'm coming basically from the actionable items in section 1 to 3 towards the concrete threat level of hostile Russia and the Second Cold War. And then also to see the global dimension of the whole process, how to reform the post-war World War II institutional level for the next 30 years of globalization. And then now I will go into the history of Europe, in a sense, because it's not only the history of the EU, but also the history of NATO, the history of the Cold War, and how that affected towards the institutional setup which we have now, and what that means also, and that's ultimately what I want to explain, and that one I want to argue as well, how that explains the current challenges and how we need American support again for enlargement. It will be maybe much talk about history. I will go in the following 7 to 9 steps in a way. I will go from an EU of 6 countries to an EU of 9 countries to an EU of 12 countries to a EU of 15 countries, to a EU of then 28 countries, and then to the tragic loss of the UK recently, 27, and then I will explain 37 who should join. Some of my listeners might know that already, but I will explain again exactly out of the context of each of these enlargement steps, what was the connection with NATO, and why, and what was the geostrategic situation of the 50s, of the 70s, of the 80s, of the 2000s, of the 2010s, and of the 2020s. Yeah? And I will also put it in the context of some of the major economic crises, which we had so many, and what they meant actually for European unification process, and what also the current corona crisis, COVID crisis, and this Second Cold War, what that means for the next step of EU enlargement, and why this is necessary, and why we need American leadership to get it done. And why we always needed American leadership from the beginning, when we were this basically American liberated or occupied rest of free Europe left over with the Russian Soviet Army, Red Army, occupying half of Europe and free Europe basically completely destroyed by the terrible World War II and the Nazi terror regimes all over, and the collaborator regimes, and obviously also the war-related damages in free Europe, a big disaster. Then I will explain why that was basically possible, and what actually led to the European Union. Was it the newfound love of the Europeans or the necessity of America to do something with the American occupied Europe, if you want to say it like this? And then also how long it took and what kind of crises it took for new countries to join, and under which context actually the British, Danish, and Irish have joined. And then I will go to the 80s, to the end of the Cold War, to the fall of the fascist dictatorships in Spain, Portugal, and Greece, and how then this EU accession was possible, who pushed for it, who made it possible. You will not be surprised, it was America who helped us to find unity despite all our differences. And then I will go into the neutral expansion and enlargement of the EU with my native Austria, but Sweden and Finland as well. Why we joined at that time as neutral countries and why that was necessary but long-term problematic, but can be fixed now with NATO membership of Austria, Sweden and Finland, and how we then developed into 28 with all the Eastern Europeans, or most of the Central and Eastern European, the 13 countries, the two islands, Cyprus and Malta, but also then Romania, Bulgaria, and before the 10 in 2004 from the Baltics to the Central Europeans to Slovenia, and also Croatia then, and how this all developed and how it was possible to achieve it, and how then also the result of the Second Cold War and the confrontation in Syria and in Ukraine, and also the Russian meddling into the Brexit referendum, and also this complicated relationship we always had with the British leading to the Brexit, and also what now must be the next steps in the European unification process, how Ukraine, Georgia, Moldova, and also the six Balkan countries, Albania first, and then Montenegro and North Macedonia now, but in the next step also Kosovo, Serbia, and Bosnia shall and must join with help of America into the European Union. Why we need American leadership to achieve it, and why we are without American leadership incapable to do it, and why we have always been incapable to do it, because simply the divisions in Europe are too big, hard to overcome, and not easy to get on one table, because we have these ancient antagonisms. We now love this kind of peace rhetoric, and we today, actually it's on the 22nd of January, and it's also the day for German-French friendship of the 63 contract treaty between in the LSA between France and Germany. But why that happened was also only possible because also against French wishes, Germany was rearmed and was allowed in NATO in 55, and then in this Cold War crisis in the 60s, then came this German-French treaty, which is very good and very positive. But I will explain all the European history from an American perspective, because it is a global Cold War. It was a global Cold War, and it is again partly a smaller Cold War, definitely, but also this kind of global confrontation between America and the Soviet Union and now Russia is happening in Europe, obviously, and we are torn in this conflict, and we have to understand the European unification process not only as a newfound love between the Europeans or newfound rationality of understanding that a continental-wide union would be very practical, but we have to understand it from the example of the United States, this shining city on the hill working so well and so high prosperity that it was able to project power three times, basically, to secure free Europe in the First, in the Second Cold War, in the First World War, in the Second World War, and also in the Cold War, and also until now, and for the long term. So that was, of course, a shining example, but also then American nudging, supporting NGOs, making sure that it really happens, suggesting and having influence behind the scenes and openly towards Europe to be more united in order to have more prosperity, not to be always a problem for a free America and the free world, but to be successful. And now, now we have changed our internal narrative. We explain it more that we are the reason for peace and we are the peace project, and it's good. Yeah, there's nothing bad in explaining something positively in the own legitimacy to explain the world like this towards their own voters. But I think at least the elite should know who really did it, and also objectively. It is American-funded and American-inspired and American-supported project. And it always has. In the various phases, when we felt a little bit snobby and more successful, we then, and or when America was in a crisis, we then always tried to explain it more in a European narrative. But I think it is important to understand it factually, how it all happened and how we have to work now to make sure that also the wisdom or the American nudging is there to include Ukraine and to include also Kosovo and Serbia and Bosnia, Albania, Montenegro, because we Europeans, we will never have this kind of generosity, this magnanimity, and this kind of understanding that this is necessary by itself. Because it will be always about sharing our resources, opening our labor markets, opening our potential towards much poorer people eastwards, which we hardly know, most of us, unfortunately, which very few care, and which we don't feel necessary to defend. America will always have to defend the free world, ultimately, because it's simply the adult in the room. And then we Europeans, when there is a war in the Balkans, we are falling automatically in this appeasement mechanism or in trying to ignore it. Always, you know, generous in a way in the crisis, yes, yeah, but never able to project reasonable power to stop it. And so ultimately all problems of Eastern Europe now and the Balkans before will be on the American table. So I call also, and I want to make this clear, that the Europeans have to be reasonable partners in this process. And when it comes to the security of Ukraine and the Balkans, it's also economic security. And this the Europeans have to basically accompany this level of security with participating in the economic reconstruction of Eastern Europe in a much more generous way than now, and also with including the countries who want in the European project fully as members for Ukraine, for Moldova, for Georgia, and not to do global politics in the French way or in the German way, because the French-German perspective will be always this overmighty Russia on the east, in where we don't really have any means to defend ourselves. So the reflex of everybody in the capitals will always be what we can give you, Moscow, some parts of Ukraine or so. You know, it will be always over towards appeasement, yeah? Because simply there is no will to contain and no capability to do so. And it only is with America. And if America then has to do it anyhow, then the Europeans should at least open the institutions and the purses in order to help that it really works very successfully. And this is the same mechanism from the beginning, from the end, from the beginning of the Cold War, with German rearmament, NATO enlargement, prosperity and success, economic miracle. And the same Adenauer model, that's why I always call for an Adenauer plan and for an Adenauer role model. That was the German chancellor who started this Western integration, obviously with the help of his American counterparts, President Truman and President Eisenhower. This will be basically section number 6. I will go into this 8, maybe it will be more. And then I will call for a new Maastricht kind of treaty. Maastricht was our post-war conference, post-Cold War conference in 92, where basically the European peace order was not done in a Vienna or Paris kind of style congress, but we had this process of reforming the European Union as a result of German unification, as a result of Eastern European freedom, as a result of the end of the Soviet Union. So we had this, I call it the European Peace Conference after the Cold War. It's called in generally the Maastricht Treaty. And this was then opening the EU for the new enlargement rounds and also creating the euro and this and also more many more important reforms. But these are the most important in the context of what I want to discuss here. And this is basically my call, that this conference about the future of Europe, which is coming now, is preparing Ukrainian EU integration and Euroization of Ukraine, Georgia and the Balkans and whole Eastern Europe, all of them who want. We are not an imperialist project. Nobody has to join. Only it's an offer for all who want. But the attached institutions, they are the basis for massive increasing of prosperity, freedom, security, and that's obviously what is very much what I very much hope that the countries who are eligible, like Ukraine, Georgia, Moldova, and also Kosovo, Serbia, Bosnia, and very soon already our NATO allies, Albania, Montenegro, and North Macedonia, will be member already in this mandate, and the other six in the next mandate. And that's, I think, I will conclusively explain this plan now in this various podcast series, in the series number 6. And that will be much history, but also my proposals for EU enlargement. I will always explain out of this historic context. And that will be the 6th section of the podcast, Pax Europiana. And have no doubt, it will be very much always about Ukraine in the European Union and NATO and the Euro, and also Kosovo. Also, please recognize Kosovo, Ukraine, and also Georgia, Moldova, recognize Kosovo, and all together in NATO, together with Bosnia first, and then also Serbia, and first in NATO, then in the EU, in the, then the Euro, and then the EU membership. That's the cadence of things. And I will also explain why this is necessary. And let me conclude. Yes, Europe is an amazing peace project, and we can be all very proud about the European Union. But it is a peace project with this kind of twin pillar piece of NATO. And NATO basically is American-backed prosperity and security. And this must be understood, because we have to explain it that way. Otherwise, the anti-American feelings, jealousy, envy, and lack of knowledge of America is always easy to be manipulated by Russian-inspired or nationalistic groups from the extreme left and the extreme right. And always, for the geography and historic reason of our divisions and our geography, there can be only two Europes. It's an American Europe, that's what we have today, or it's a Russian Europe, that's what we had in half of Europe for 40 years, and that's a disaster. So we need this American Europe to be strong, to be understood, with a strong friendship, the EU to join NATO, the free trade agreement TTIP to be done now, and to have a really common identity developed stronger, this friendship with America, ultimately a common market between the US in labor, energy, goods, services, capital. This is the long-term vision we should really work for. And that's the way to manage globalization. That's also to compete with our competitor China, which is already a very united continental state. And this is the future between the North American continent and the European continent. And this is what it is ultimately about. Yes, that's the plan. And in the next series, I will somehow guide you in a very deep crisis period. And I will try to describe how the poverty was and how the wisdom of our founding fathers was and who were our founding fathers. Names that every European should know, and explain Europe in this context. And I hope it is, in the spirit of Messina, an interesting tour through the European history since the Second World War. And it's also hopefully enlightening for some of you who listen to support EU enlargement towards 37 member states and a stronger, more united, more powerful Europe as a pillar of the Western world and as a member of NATO in Europe. Thanks a lot. Bye.